Welcome to the Hockey Writers Podcast, where your favorite THW contributors discuss the hottest topics around the NHL and hockey world every weekday, Monday through Friday. Listen daily on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts, and make sure to check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com. I'm your host, Kyle Knopp, and today I'm joined by Peter Barrichini and Carey Collins. How are you guys doing today?
I'm pretty good.
I'm doing great, I guess. I don't know.
Well, we're happy to have you both back this week, so thank you for joining. I want to get your guys' thoughts on a few different things today. First, we're going to wrap up the first round, and then we want to touch on a little round two preview. So let's jump right into it. So touching on that first round, Peter, you are not only our head of draft prospects here at the Hockey Writers, but you also cover the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I do.
So I want to get your final thoughts on that Maple Leaf series. How did this elimination differ from last year? It seems like there's a little bit of a different feel around it. So let's start there. How is this elimination different in terms of where they were last season?
Yeah. And I recently wrote kind of like a postmortem piece on how the Maple Leafs deserved better in the first round, even though that they lost. And yeah, I know my mentions and comment section is just blowing up, but whatever, you know, this is how I felt. And you know what, based on like over the last five series of, I'm going to say four, because the Washington one, when they first started off in 2017 and made the playoffs, it was more of a feeling out process. But the ones against the Bruins, where they got dismantled in game sevens back to back, where they had two poor performances against the Columbus Blue Jackets and Montreal Canadiens, where they were obviously the favorite. It wasn't those kind of performances. You knew that this season they talked about having a newfound mentality. And when you lose 7-2 to a Pittsburgh Penguins team without four or five of their best players, you start to question, is this team actually for real? And you saw them build it up even more throughout the season. And it looked like we were going to see a very different Maple Leafs team. And, you know, they've always talked the talk, but it was time for them to walk the walk and put, you know, their money where their mouth is and actually show it. This was the first series where I actually had faith in a Maple Leafs team. Like, I was optimistic last year, but what happened was just absolutely ridiculous, but there was more of a sense of urgency with this team. I had belief that they could go far. If they won this series, who knew what they could have accomplished? And, you know, it's an unfortunate outcome, but, you know, they showed grit, they showed determination, they showed a bit of that killer instinct that they were trying to find. Although some may argue that, you know, if they would have won, that killer instinct would have been there to finish off game seven. But, you know, I was upset with the loss. Like, who isn't? But they had it. They had something going, and you could argue that it wasn't there for game seven, but they battled back. They showed that in a loss against Tampa in game two, they battled back in game three, lost badly in game four, came back in game five, came back down 2-0 twice, won game five, should have won game six, but I'm not going to get into the officiating because that's a different story. And same thing with game seven. They showed they keep up, and the fact that they almost beat out the back-to-back cup champs says a lot, and they should take this as a major positive. And I know that they're doing their media availability right now, and even post-game, they were, you know, who wouldn't be upset with the fact that they lost again? But they should hold their head high, and there's going to be a lot of doom and gloom, but I think I've been confident with this team that I think maybe they should run it back before making any major significant changes.
That's a great point you bring up. I think absolutely. Yeah. The feel around that game seven and watching it, at least from the States here, was that it wasn't as much of a letdown in the past, not to say that there wasn't a letdown, because obviously anytime a series ends, there is a letdown, but it just seemed to have a different feeling, almost as though, you know, it was there, but it wasn't expected. You know, like you said, Tampa Bay's the two-time reigning defending Stanley Cup champion. They're one of those teams that are absolutely built for the playoffs, and they are untouchable in elimination games, it seems, and especially with Vasilevskiy, and they played that way in those final two games. So yes, there are building blocks for the Maple Leafs. So Where do you see that progress? Where did you see the most progress? Where do you think they have the most growth in terms of returning with this team next year?
Well, first and foremost, their top players showed up. I mean, I did a comparison. Lightning, with their star players, Stamkos and Point had 4 points. Kucherov led the way with 8. Hedman with 7 and Palat with 5. Toronto had all their star players show up when they needed to, especially in games 5, 6, and 7, where Tavares and Nylander were kind of quiet in the beginning, but they picked their play up and they needed to be better. And Toronto stars combined for 36 points compared to the 28 for Tampa. So there was talk last year that, you know, Matthews and Marner didn't show up, you know, they got to play in the big moments or whatever. Everyone is going to say they didn't do much in game 7, but both of them were on the Morgan Riley goal. And yeah, that's 3/5 of their top 5 right there, or top 5 star players or core players right there. All 3 connected on that. And, you know, again, low scoring game. They had their chances. They had their looks. They were physical. They were a major factor. And compared to last year, they were more into it. They were playing like they wanted to win. And I think to me, that was the biggest reason for that. And, you know, I'm also, there's also something going around about, you know, rumors of this being Dubas's Kawhi, or like the similarity to the summer of Kawhi, like Masai Ujiri did with the Toronto Raptors. And look what happened there. But based on the mentality that they had this time around, you're facing a fine line with, do you run it back? Do you blow it up and make a change right now? Because anything is basically all cards are on the table at this point. But mainly my main takeaway was that the star showed up and they needed to, and they did.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, Austin Matthews led the series in goals for both teams. You know, both of those guys showed up. And if you look at, if you look at just that game 7 production, I mean, who scored for the Lightning? It was their new third line acquisition. Yep. And so it wasn't just, you know, that top line players, or if you compare it that way, then yeah, Toronto Maple Leafs star players outperform the Lightning. So that's very interesting. And you just mentioned that you don't believe any changes, or at least no core changes should be made. They shouldn't blow it up, and they should try and run it back. What are the main changes that you do think need to be made? Is it goaltending? Is it defense? Is it depth scoring? What's the one or two changes that you think is going to get them over the hump next year?
Well, they need to re-sign Jack Campbell first and foremost. I mean,
oh, he played great.
He was fantastic. And this series proved that he deserves a contract extension. Now, where they stand in terms of figures and term, that's to be seen. I think that you got to get rid of Peter Mrazek's contract. You got to get rid of Justin Hall's $2 million, and you got to free up Alexander Kerfoot's $3.5 million, because they had a killer instinct in terms of trying to produce, but they didn't have someone that can be sort of like a Tom Wilson kind of player in their face and still produce kind of thing. I think they need to add one more top 6 gritty player, but can still produce in a top 6 role. And there are some fantastic options out there on the market that maybe they try and circle back on. I know they were trying to get Andrew Kopp at the deadline, and he's a free agent now. Riley Smith from the Vegas Golden Knights. Those are guys that can be viable top 6 options or second line options for the Maple Leafs. I think that maybe you try to get one more top 4 defenseman, but with the way that I saw with the progression of Timothy Liljegren this year, I think maybe you try to up his ice time into a top 4 role, because they need a right-handed defenseman, and I think it's his time now. They need to make some moves. I think you make some smaller depth changes to try and build up the depth as well. They got free agents, UFA and unrestricted, that they got to take care of and figure out who should stay and who should go, because a lot of names are possibly going to be on the move. And the big thing, promote from within. I think Pontus Holmberg looked great in a short stint with the Marlies, looked great at the Olympics for Sweden. Alex Dees was a major standout as a college signing last season. So are these players trying to be promoted from within? That's another big thing. I think you try to do smaller changes than big ones, but if a big one does happen, it's going to catch us all by surprise.
Yeah, and you bring up two good names there. Riley Smith and Andrew Kopp, both solid left-handed shot forwards that I think would have made quite the difference in that lineup this season. One more name that I've kind of seen thrown around on Twitter the last couple of days, and I want to bring up to you as you cover the Toronto Maple Leafs. I cover the Red Wings around here at the Hockey Writers.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on Tyler Bertuzzi as a Maple Leaf?
Okay. Before all of the, you know, vaccine talk or whatever happened, I was on board with the Maple Leafs trying to get Tyler Bertuzzi. This was before anything happened, and even talks extended in the last year where there's possibly some engagement, and the Maple Leafs have been rumored to be in on him. But given how this season he wasn't able to play games in Canada because of the vaccination status for Canadians, he had to stay in America, and those are the rules. If Tyler Bertuzzi, I absolutely do love his play. Let's get one thing straight. But if he isn't vaccinated, if he isn't willing to get the shot or do that, if the deal comes in place with the Maple Leafs, it isn't going to happen. That's the only hurdle that can hurt any chances of a deal to try and get something going, because I'm sure the Maple Leafs have something that Detroit needs. And Red Wings obviously have someone that they could use in Tyler Bertuzzi for the Maple Leafs. There's no question about that. If he's willing to get the shot, great, because that's the only thing holding him back. Because if he can't get the shot, he can't play in Canada. Well, even if he isn't unvaccinated, I don't think he can still play in Canada. I don't know if the rules are going to change or not, but that's where it still stands. That to me is the only X factor or major reason why they don't go through with it, because everyone on the team, everyone on the staff is vaccinated. It's just Tyler Bertuzzi at this point, whether he's able to get the shot or not. That's a big factor now.
I think that's the biggest thing, is it's going to come down to whether he gets it. I mean, I highly doubt they'll change the rules for one player. He's the only player
and only one
staff member that hasn't gotten the shot. And that really did change the dynamics of that Detroit team whenever they were in Canada this season. I think, you know, say he's vaccinated, everything's good to go, there's a deal on the table. Do the Maple Leafs have to give up too much to get him? Or is this something that you feel is within their grasp?
I mean, you're always looking. I mean, let's face it. He was on a torrid start, and you know what? 30 goals, 62 points. You're looking at like a really good return for Detroit. I mean, you would think that you would have to look at maybe a first round pick, top prospect, possibly going the other way at this point. I could rest assure you right now that names like Nick Robertson, Topi Niemelä, Matthew Nyes are definitely off the table. There's no way that Detroit's going to get them. I've always been I still like him. I think Ronnie Hirvonen could be a name. A really fantastic shot, smaller type centerman, but very great puck possession style game. I think that obviously those two are going to be what Detroit needs. And if they don't need another first round pick, because I'm pretty sure they're pretty well stocked up at this point, who knows what can happen? I mean, if it isn't Toronto, there's definitely going to be teams lining up for a 30 goal scorer and a guy that can, you know, be a pest, get under the opposition skin, put up the shots. I mean, he could do it all. He does have that factor that the Maple Leafs need. Again, it's too early for me for pricing, but if I was to base it on that, that's where I would go.
Yeah. And that sounds about right. And I think obviously this could all be for moot anyway, if he doesn't get the vaccine and they can't even play in Canada, why is the Canadian team going to go after him? But I just wanted to get your thoughts since we had you here. And I think it'll be interesting. I don't think Detroit's necessarily shopping him to get rid of him, so to speak, but I did see that pop up quite a bit as to that Maple Leafs fans thought that a Bertuzzi type player was kind of what was lacking in this playoff series. So I want to get your thoughts on that. So
they get a guy like that, sure, it's gonna help. Do they need to blow this whole thing up? No, it's not like they got swelled. But what I'm saying, I mean, my thoughts on it are, you know, coming from covering the Avalanche the last few years, they're just going through the same thing that Colorado goes through in the second round. And I've got a story coming out today about how, are they cursed? No, I think they've taken everything from each one of those last three second round losses, and it's made them better. And I think that's what for a team that's struggling to get out of the first round, that was a heck of a pretty tough draw. There's nothing you can do about that. That's just how the dominoes fell during the regular season. Mm-hmm. But they were right there, and like you guys talked about, the Stars were there too. So, mm-hmm. If they played that series five more times, Toronto probably wins it three times, and they got to play it again. It's like I just think they're right there. If they play maybe anybody else in the first round, we're not talking about this anymore. Everybody else kind of struggled in the first round, and I don't think Toronto stunk. I think they were pretty good. It's just, boy, that's a team that hasn't lost a series in 2 years. Is pretty tough draw for that first round.
And yeah, I was going to say this, if it was the same effort, like in Montreal, Columbus, then blow everything right up. But again, the effort was there. That's the main thing. And also I'm still going to say this, and let's go back to 1-8. Simple as that.
Yeah.
And this is different than last year. I mean, last year you could, against Montreal, you could kind of feel it coming.
Yeah.
You felt it coming on. And this one, it didn't feel like that. It just felt like, I think they're going to do it,
Yeah.
But I mean, it's tough beating Vasilevskiy in the first round, especially after, the Columbus series with them a few years ago. They're not taking anybody, they're not doing anything or taking anything lightly. So I just think that was a great series, and they just came up on the coin came up. If they needed heads, it came up tails.
Yeah. Carey, you brought up a great point there. Just that this Maple Leafs, or sorry, this Lightning team has built themselves to be a playoff ready team after that Columbus debacle. They won the President's Trophy. They got swept in the first round, and they absolutely, at that time, I believe Yzerman was still there with the Lightning at that time. Maybe he had just left, but it might have been Julian Brisebois. But either way, they came up with a plan to say, how can we make sure this never happens again? We got to be ready to make sure the series, if we're going to get down in a series, we're going to have the tools to take it the full seven. And that's what they've done. Vasilevskiy is 17-0 after a loss. So you're talking, for two playoff years, he has not lost in back-to-back games. That's just insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You don't see those types of numbers anymore. So Tampa Bay went out and built themselves for the playoffs. That's where they're not concerned with finishing first or second or third in the regular season. They are built for, we make the playoffs and then we show up and play. And I think, like you said, that's just the toughest draw for the Maple Leafs, who are having trouble getting out of the first round.
I just think that once Toronto gets out of the first round, they're going to win it. They're just going to say, finally, the dam's going to be busted, and then all of a sudden they're going to score 40 goals every series, and it's going to be crazy. But people ask me about that with Colorado. Do you think it's in their head? Do you think you think about it? Yeah, of course you did. They do, because they were all in those games. They've all been in part of those series and losses and stuff. So do they think about it? Yeah. Do they let it bother them? I don't know. That's individual, I'm sure. But I just think that once this team breaks through, and they're gonna, they're just too talented not to, but it just stinks. This last one was, you got a game seven at home. You feel like you got to win, but people say, oh, you got to win it. It's a game seven at home. Well, you're playing a back-to-back champ. It's not like it doesn't even matter like who they were playing, or if they were playing anybody else. Like I said, I don't think that series goes seven games, even if it's Florida. I think that the way that they played in that first round, I think they would have beaten Florida too. So it's just unfortunate.
I was just about to say, their start was what you wanted in a game seven. They didn't have that
for sure.
In the game five against Columbus, in the game seven against Montreal, they came out flying. They were ready. Yeah.
And they played a great game. It was very back and forth, and both goaltenders showed up. But just unfortunately, Vasilevskiy just made the couple extra saves that he needed to make. And, and Tampa Bay found a way to get it done. That's been their MO the last 2 years and they continue to get it done. So, all right. Well, I think we could talk Maple Leafs all day, but since we have Carey here, I'd like to get a little bit of a look at that second round preview. And, you know, we have the St. Louis Blues versus Colorado Avalanche. Like you mentioned, the Colorado Avalanche have lost the last 3 years in the second round. They're kind of a second round Maple Leafs cursed team, so to speak, like you kind of mentioned. So I want to get your thoughts there, Carey. How do these teams match up? How do the St. Louis Blues match up against the Colorado Avalanche? You know, and will they be ready? Does that extra rest help or hurt the Avs?
I don't think it ever hurts, especially when your goalie gets stabbed in the eye. I don't think it ever hurts to, you know, get a little bit of rest. I don't know if there's any rust on this team right now, but they match up with St. Louis. St. Louis is a different team than they were in 2019. The teams like St. Louis fare all right against Colorado. I think they had 920 goal scorers, and that's what you're going to need. You're going to need to get something from every single line. Because Colorado is probably going to get it too. And it's just, I'm looking forward to this series. I didn't care who came out of Minnesota or St. Louis, just because all of those games between them and Colorado this year have been so good. And well, last couple of years. And with St. Louis, I mean, Colorado swept them out of the playoffs in the first round last year. And in every one of their games this year and in that series last year, there's just been tons of goals scored. So Colorado has been lighting it up. I mean, I think they scored 21 goals in the four games in the first round. And that was with one game that was a 2-1 overtime win. So they're clicking right now, but so are the Blues. And when they put Jordan Binnington into that series against Minnesota, it just completely changed the dynamic of it. They were down 2-1 and they just never looked back. And I think they scored 5 goals in each of those last 3 games. Ryan O'Reilly is like really hot right now. And he's always done really well against Colorado ever since he left. So
it always seems to be how it happens, right?
Oh yeah. But between him and Matt Duchene, Matt Duchene against Colorado, I think since he left, he's played against him in, 12, 13 games. I think he's got 13, 14 goals. He just lights him up every time he plays him. But that's the way Ryan O'Reilly has been. He doesn't really score as many goals, but boy, does he pile up assists. And man, did he look good at the end of that last series. I just think that Colorado's pretty – I mean, every other series won at least 6 games. And they just sort of, Daryl Sutter even said, I feel sorry for whoever plays Colorado in the first round. What a waste of 8 days. And he ended up being like totally right. Like
it was like 8 days on the dot.
So I just think that St. Louis has been kind of a thorn in Colorado's side. Is they're like one of the only teams that's been able to win in Colorado that they've, played regularly. So I think they've got a shot here. It's just, boy, the Avalanche look like a steamroller right now. And they didn't finish the regular season that hot. But gosh, that 5 goals in the first period, I think they scored 3 goals in the first 5, or like 7-8 minutes or something of that first game. And one of them was even a shorthanded goal in that game 1 against. I think they are hell-bent on kicking this curse. And I think they're tired of, people talking about it. And the expectations are so high. And we talked about that a little bit with, at the end there on Toronto. You look at 3 years ago, and they haven't advanced past the second round since 2010. So, it's been a long time. It's just that these last 3 years have been, devastating. They've won 8 second round games in the last 3 years. They just don't have a series win to show for it. And it's just against San Jose 3 years ago, that was a team that probably shouldn't even have been in the playoffs. Then they just shocked Calgary. I think they beat them in 5 games. And then they went on to, then they had to play San Jose, who had the second best record in the West that year. And they took that series 7 games somehow. They were not as good as that team, I don't think. And I just, I mean, you lose in 7 games, it stinks, but I think they learned that the expectations for Colorado wouldn't be where they were without that season. I mean, absolutely. I just don't think they're talking Stanley Cup and stuff the last couple of years without, you know, the kind of overachievement of that series. It's just last year was the devastating one, you know, going up 2-0 on Vegas and then, I mean, not winning again. Like,
that's the hardest part, right? Is to have that early lead and then to vanquish it. Any lead, even if it's just one game. I mean, yeah, it's one game you're up and then the next game you're back to an even series, but to have a 2-0 lead and to have that, I mean, they handedly were in control of that series and then they just couldn't get it started.
Well, especially the way that game two shook out. I think they won 3-2 in overtime. Vegas out is in Colorado. Vegas outshot them by almost 20. Grubauer totally stole that game. And there was a big feeling around Denver anyway, that, okay, that was Vegas's best shot.
Yeah.
And to think that they were going to, you know, lose 4 out of the next even 5 games, you know, 4 out of 5 against them, let alone 4 in a row. There was just, nobody thought that was going to happen. And then Vegas, they kind of shifted their lines a little bit. Fleury dialed in. And then, they dominated them. There was 2 games where, I mean, combined, I think Colorado had only 38 shots on goal. And that's just completely uncharacteristic to have a, they had 1 game in there with 18 shots on goal. And I mean, you got a guy like Nathan MacKinnon who can get 9 himself. Yeah. And that was just a team that got outplayed and outcoached over those last, especially the last 3 games. And that one really stung for Avalanche fans. But I just think that, I mean, they match up pretty well and they're pretty electric right now. And I don't see St. Louis beating them. Vegas last year, you kind of were like, oh, well, Vegas played them pretty tough. Marc-Andre Fleury, you know.
You never
can. I mean, this one, if they lose to St. Louis in this year's second round, I just think that, I mean, Joe Sakic, their team president, he'll have some decisions to make where how we talked about, I don't think they need to really blow it up in Toronto. I'm not saying necessarily blow it up in Colorado, but
they need to,
geez, what do they got to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right there. I mean, this is, you know, what's worse, being stuck in the first round or being stuck in the second round? I guess it doesn't really matter because every team's goal is to win that Stanley Cup. So if you're not doing that, then, you know, you're not achieving your goals. But, you know, you brought up a couple of good points in your mentions there. The first is that between the two teams, I believe it was St. Louis has 9 20 goal scorers and Colorado had 7. So that's 16 goal scorers, 20 goal scorers between the two teams, where the next two highest teams are the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning with 6 apiece. So that's only 12. So you have almost a full line and more of 20 plus goal scorers in this game. And then you also have a goaltender in Darcy Kemper, who has been fantastic this season. And then 2 over in St. Louis, Ville Husso and Jordan Bennington, who have also shown to be exceptionally great this year. And Bennington is proven once again that he is a playoff performer. So who do you see as being an X factor in this series? Is it going to be the depth scoring? Is it going to be the goaltending? Or is it going to have to be the stars?
I mean, the stars, when talking about X factors, I mean, I always think the stars are always going to be there. And if they don't show up, the series usually gets over pretty quick.
True.
For whichever team. But, you know, looking at the goaltending is going to be a big deal just because there's going to be a million shots in this period or in this, this series. I was going to say this period, and that might be true too, but it just seems like that depth, you talk about the depth scoring, is such a huge deal in the playoffs. I mean, look at that Saturday with those game sevens. I mean, the heroes were Nick Paul, Cody Ceci, and Max Domi. I mean, if you bet on those guys to have big games in game seven, you know, hopefully you're living in Vegas. But it was just, I mean, that it seems like that always happens, or often, if not always. And when you have guys on Colorado, like Valeri Nichushkin all of a sudden, like, has a monster year. And, you know, when you look at, say, on St. Louis, I mean, 920 goal scorers, they don't really have, like, the one guy they super need to lean on. And that comes in handy. That's when you get a hat trick from David Perron in the game one against Minnesota, it's like a big deal. And you just don't know where it's coming from with them. I mean, Jordan Kyrou, I think, for St. Louis is a, you know, a player that has a chance to, like, really put a stamp on things. He was really good in the first round. It's going to be players like that that, you know, might make the difference. The X factor, I said, you know, doing the preview podcast here, I said the X factor for Colorado is going to be Devin Toews. I mean, they played four games. He had three goals and two assists, and no one's talking about him because his defensive pairing partner in his defensive pairing had twice as many points.
You know what, though? So, I think that's how Devin likes to play his game, though, is just be the quiet guy that no one really mentions and show up and perform when need be. So,
I mean, he was great on both ends in that first series. It's just Colorado's defensemen are pretty good. And it's just Cale Makar lets off quite a big, you know, aura where that's all anybody talks about. And rightfully so. I mean, he's absolutely incredible. In that first series, he was just completely bonkers too. So, but I mean, I think the X factors are going to be guys like a Devin Toews or a Jordan Kyrou or a Barbashev or a, you know, I think Robert Thomas too is a guy that's just right on the edge of just, you know, really having a coming out party here. So it's just kind of, I don't know who it's going to be because there's so many names of people that have performed so well this year, but I really think that St. Louis needs all of them. And Colorado needs, you know, guys like JT Compher, Valeri Nichushkin, Burakovsky, you know, Andre Burakovsky, things like guys like that. They need to step up just because those top lines tend to kind of cancel each other out, especially as you get deeper in the playoffs. And I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Nathan MacKinnon's on a mission right now, though. He finished that last season, that last press conference, and he said, you know, I'm going into my ninth year and I haven't won anything.
Yeah.
And he was unstoppable in that first round. And
yeah, he really was.
He looks like he's skating with like the turbo button held down nonstop, and everybody else is kind of going backwards. That's the way he usually plays. And he even found another gear, it looked like, against Nashville. I mean, I think this guy is tired of hearing about how he hasn't won anything. And I think it bothers him more than anybody. And boy, did he come out flying in that first series. And
yeah, he
did. I don't know what's going to happen in the series. Of course, I think it'll probably go at least five, six games. I think Colorado is going to win, but I just really think this first game for sure, they've been itching to get back out there. Yeah. It's been a week since they played. And I don't know. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of goals scored in this period or in this series. Jesus, saying that. I think there's going to be a lot of goals scored in this series. And I think that getting Kemper back, that was a pretty scary injury. His eye was swollen for days. It finally went down. They said he should be available now. They absolutely have to have him.
Oh, absolutely. I 1000% agree that this is a different team without Kemper back there. No offense to Francois, but Kemper's their guy. They brought him in. They got rid of Grubauer to bring in Kemper because this is who they want to go with. This is who they think will get them over that hump. So it's really going to come down. I think you're right. It's going to be a goaltending versus goal scoring showdown. I think there's going to be a lot of goals, but yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. I think it's going to be a very high tempo type series, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So
yeah, because I think in these high tempo series, there's always a game. It's like 2-1.
Yeah.
And whoever wins that game ends up like getting such a huge advantage. I mean, even in that first round series, you can talk about how Colorado just stomped Nashville. That second game, when Ingram like stood on his head and they lost 2-1 in overtime in Denver. If they win that game in overtime, I think that series is different. I think they go probably, you know, maybe Nashville gets one more, but after that game, it was just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We lost. We shouldn't have lost this one. And they really couldn't afford to. I mean, that was such a big game. And if they win that game and it's 1-1 going to Nashville, I think the complexions of it is just a little bit different. Colorado, I'm sure, still wins, but maybe get another game out of there and take it 6 games or something. But
yeah, and that's the beauty of the playoffs, right? Is anything can change within the course of one game, and one game can change the course of a whole series. I mean, there's momentum swings, and you know, teams just need that little, you know, one little bounce to go their way to really kind of get that feeling of, you know, hey, we're here, we can do this. So. All right. I want to keep us on time, so I'm going to switch over to the articles of the day real quick. I'm going to go first. My article today, and I'm just going to discuss this real quick, but it's by Austin Stanovic. He wrote 5 Kings who impressed during the 2022 Stanley Cup playoffs. And I just want to touch on a couple of them real quick. I'm going to touch on 2 and one of the honorable mentions. You know, he touches on 5 different players who really stood out for the Kings, and he has 4 honorable mentions as well. The honorable mention I want to touch about is Troy Stetcher. He was brought over for a 7th round draft pick in the deadline from the Detroit Red Wings. So I might be a little biased there, but I thought Troy played really well in the bottom pairing in the playoffs. He was very solid. He put up points and he shut down the team or the players from the Oilers that he needed to shut down in that series. And then the other 2 that Austin goes on to talk about that I really want to touch on are Jonathan Quick. I mean, I think we all know what Jonathan Quick can bring to a series and how he can steal it. But I don't think anyone expected him to do it this season. I think a lot of people expected him to be a little bit past his prime, kind of on the downswing. But man, did he show that he can still steal games, and he is just as good as ever. And then the other player that, again, last season shouldn't have been a surprise, but was Philip Deneau. I think he was a fantastic addition to that Kings lineup and just did such a great job shutting down Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl throughout the series, and just unfortunately did not have enough to get the Kings over that hump. So that was 5 Kings who impressed during the 2022 Stanley Cup playoffs by Austin Stanovic. Over to you, Peter. What is your article of the day?
Yeah, my article of the day is Philip Forsberg trade revisited by Tony Wolak. And, you know, you always see what obviously is with Philip Forsberg being a prospect with the Nashville Predators or Washington Capitals at the time. It's hard to dictate who might be successful in their career, but he was a 1st-round pick. So I don't, this is one of those trades that just what are you thinking kind of thing? 11th overall in 2012 by the Capitals, and he goes on to be an absolute goal-scoring threat and superstar for the Nashville Predators. I mean, the Washington Capitals wanted to try and make a deep run, adding some depth with Martin Irad and Michael Latta, but it did not work out at all. I mean, he only played in 9 games for the Capitals in 2012-13, 3 points. And when the next season with the Capitals, he had 1 goal and 23 assists. So in 62 games, he only had 2 goals for the Capitals. And he was a really good, 55 to 60 point producer with the Predators, but you know, it's really shocking to see how this trade just really absolutely backfired and what could have been for the Washington Capitals had they kept Philip Forsberg and whether he was going to be a major producer or not, because let's face it, he was fourth overall for Rookie of the Year. And this is behind, you know, names like Aaron Ekblad. I'm trying to find the actual list. Aaron Ekblad, who won, Mark Stone, Johnny Gaudreau. And that season, Forsberg had 63 points. So he should have been a strong consideration for Rookie of the Year, because he's been consistent ever since. And that could have played a major factor for the Washington Capitals' success. And it probably could have led to a cup earlier. Who knows? But still a fantastic read from Tony. Once again, it's called Philip Forsberg Trade Revisited.
Yeah, it's a great article. So make sure you check that out on thehockeywriters.com. And coming over to you, Carey, what is your article of the day?
My article of the day is Rangers Stars Rebounding versus Penguins Saved Season by Brian Abate. When I initially clicked on this story, I thought, oh, he's going to talk about Shesterkin, Zibanejad, maybe another player. No, he talks about six dudes. It's like a very deep dive. And it's not just, oh, this guy scored a couple of goals. Shesterkin made a couple of big saves. No, it's like, it goes over everything. It's a really deep dive into how in those last three games, sort of like guys like Adam Fox and Zibanejad sort of flipped the switch. And it's not just about the goals and points and things like that. I mean, he talks about that first line's forecheck and how it changed the game in game seven. The forecheck by the Rangers was just incredible. And then game six, he talks about Shesterkin's, that stretch pass that he made to Kreider. Like, I mean, he talks about all these different little like pieces and how they all fit together to make this puzzle that got the Rangers to the second round. And it's a really good read with, you know, a lot of good insight just from the standpoint of, he's not just talking about points. He's not just talking about a couple of players. He goes through, I mean, there's six different players that he talks about how they changed their game and the difference it made. And it's just, it's a kind of a longer story, but it's a pretty fun read and it's totally worth it. I mean, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, Brian does a great job of breaking down everything that the Rangers went to. And I remember watching the game. I think it was game five or game six when the Rangers put together back-to-back goals, but it was when their kid line scored. And I think it was either to tie the game or to take a one-goal lead. But as soon as their kid line scored, it was right off the forecheck. It was a great play. Kako set up Lafreniere, and I just kind of like, I was sitting by myself, might have had my dog, looked over at my dog, said, there it is. Like, that was kind of the moment that I thought the Rangers were turning it around. And here we are, they made it to the next round. So, all right. Well, to keep us on time today, we'll wrap it up right here. So thank you for listening to this episode of the Hockey Writers Podcast. Listen to new episodes Monday to Friday on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure to check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com. From Kyle Knopp, Peter Barachini, and Carey Collins, this has been the Hockey Writers Podcast.